Hello everyone, welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon Enyart, and Aiden could not join us tonight. She is streaming on Twitch, as you can imagine, but I have a very, very awesome guest today, Agatha Basilar. How are you doing, Agatha?
I'm doing so good, Brandon. Thanks for having me.
Well, and this is pretty huge because you are running to, you're going up against Nancy Pelosi, which is, you know, some people might have heard of her, in California. So I guess let's just dive right into it. I know we only have so much time. I have so many questions. I feel like this could go on forever, but let's dive into that first, because it's kind of the big thing. Pelosi is obviously a big name that a lot of us who consider ourselves progressives, we want to see somebody more progressive there. Mm-hmm. She is a, when we think about other progressives who have won races over people who maybe weren't as known nationally, do you think it's a benefit to be running against somebody with a bigger name?
Sometimes I think it can be helpful because your race inherently becomes a national one. I'm running to represent San Francisco, but a lot of people are interested in this race beyond San Franciscans. So that does help, let's say, with fundraising or name recognition, getting on more national news outlets. So in that way it helps, but of course it's an extremely steep uphill battle. And I'm going against someone who has enormous power and influence.
And for those who don't know, it's California District 12, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's really been a district that has been a stronghold for Pelosi for, I actually don't have the amount of years.
Yeah, for over 30 years.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been since I was born.
Right, since before I was born.
Yeah, exactly. So now there's another politician down in California, Ro Khanna, who I think a lot of people tend to associate with the progressive movement. And I've heard, though, some sound bites from him, and paraphrasing a bit here, but basically that when people have talked to him about you, or maybe even when you've talked to him, that he's said that he's a big fan of Pelosi's, or he's a supporter of Pelosi's. Mm-hmm. Is that a little bit, to me, that's a little disheartening to hear that. I know for you, it's a little bit different. You got to be, you know, you got to watch what you say and stuff like that. But does that surprise you a bit when you see this movement gathering steam?
No, it actually doesn't surprise me. I, not only with just Ro Khanna, but I've talked to other high up elected officials in the Democratic Party, and it's just a part of their job where they cannot oppose the leadership of their party in a public way. I've also had conversations with people privately who support what I'm doing, encourage it, but say that they could never talk to me publicly or endorse me or donate to me because it's all transparent. So it's fine. It's the game. And with someone that is so powerful and has been in that position for so long, I don't let it discourage me. But there are other places that I can find support.
And the main sort of theme there always tends to be, you know, when you say somebody who is as powerful as Pelosi, it is money. What is the way that we start to kind of get a hold on that when we try to get money out of politics? Because obviously it makes it a lot harder for candidates like yourself.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's really hard. You know, I'm only 27. So most people, when they run for office, they spend the first few months just reaching out to their networks for donations. And when my peer network is my age, a lot of us haven't made that much money, don't have savings, are still paying off student debt. So yeah, it's really hard for young people to run for office. There aren't many people I can ask for multiple thousands of dollars to donate to my campaign. But being a candidate that is running a grassroots campaign that is not taking corporate PAC money, one of the encouraging things that I'm seeing and hearing is that people regularly ask me, where am I getting my money from? Am I running a grassroots campaign? And they will only support me and donate to me if that is the case, if I'm not taking corporate PAC money. So it's encouraging to see that people are looking out for that, asking the right questions, and donating to those kind of candidates.
And because obviously it is harder, and we I tend to see, I actually I'm a secretary for the local Democrats here in my county. And I tend to see that obviously things like, you know, like canvassing and whatnot are, you know, huge in getting the vote out. Yeah. That being said, we are in a little bit different age as well, where there are so many other ways. What ways are you looking to capitalize on 2019 and being a young candidate in 2019?
Mm-hmm. So my district, California's 12th, is a dense, pretty small district. It's just San Francisco, which is a city that's 7 by 7 square miles. So ground game is a way to reach voters. You can actually walk the entire district in a day. So definitely want to have that with my volunteer base, knocking on doors, meeting people where they're at. And then also, this is a, you know, this is the tech capital of the world. We can really use social media nowadays to reach people. And so in fundraising, where a lot of that money would go is media buys and making compelling multimedia content that speaks to people and humanizes me. I think one of the differences between Pelosi and I, and she is someone that I respect and feel like should go down as a feminist political legend, although we have our differences and I wish we had a more progressive representative. But one of the differences is that because she is Speaker of the House and has this national position, she's not in the district as much. And she has such a formal role that these more spontaneous or that human side of just connecting with people isn't really there. So that's something that I like to do more with my campaign, like show the behind the scenes of what it takes to run for office. Who am I as a person? What are my values? And why am I in this race?
Now, I first saw you on TYT, actually, which is something that I watch a lot, And, you know, that's a channel that really has, you know, sprung candidates like AOC. Mm-hmm. What was it like being able to go on that network? And what was that experience like? And how did it affect your, say, your social media and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was pretty cool to be on the Young Turks, because that is an online channel that it's not super niche. Like most people I mentioned, I was on the Young Turks. They've heard of it.
Right.
And it's something that I had watched and followed even before I thought about running for office. So that was pretty cool. It's interesting, some of just the behind the scenes where they're playing video footage while you're talking to them on the computer. So after a few seconds of trying not to be distracted, then it's pretty okay. But yeah, a lot of people heard about me from there. I did see my donations spike up. And it was a really, great opportunity.
Well, like I said too, when you think about, you know, speaking of AOC, you know, they were big supporters of hers. Now it is funny because obviously people draw the comparison because you're young and you're looking to unseat what consider more of a centrist Democrat. But it's funny, when I saw you on the Young Turks, actually my feeling was, and I'm a big fan of AOC's, you know, people who listen to this know that, but I saw somebody who wasn't so much in AOC. There is a little bit more of a almost a cool calmness to you, whereas AOC, I love that about her as well, you know, is very, very fiery. Do you feel as though sometimes is it a good thing that you have that comparison, or can it be a hindrance to be compared to AOC? Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a great thing because the connection someone makes in their mind is instantaneous. Oh, Agatha, you are the West Coast AOC. Great, I get it. You are a young Latina woman who wants to represent traditionally marginalized communities. So that connection is great in terms of a pitch, or, you know, someone can then go and tell their friend, oh, I just met Agatha and she's so-and-so. But of course, she doesn't resonate with everyone. And I live in a district that has the most billionaire than any place in the world. So I feel like in some ways I have to balance that image as someone who is able to work with everyone and I welcome conversations with every type of person. And I'm also, AOC was one of the people who inspired me to run for office, but I also want to inspire even more people to run for office. Right. And I don't want it to be limited that you have to fit the exact profile of an AOC or a Justice Democrat to run. And everyone can have their unique personalities. Like in the beginning, I might've had a little bit of imposter syndrome that I am not as fiery. I don't have those quick-witted Bronx zingers. Mm-hmm. But it's also an asset to be a bit more calm or, I think she's very thoughtful, but just a more introspective, thoughtful.
Yeah, a more pragmatic sort of personality. No, and that's the thing is that you it is kind of a, you need that balance as well a little, you know, especially, you know, I would love to, for you to win, obviously, this election and to have, you know, in the hypothetical world where you did, it would be nice to have that sort of balance. So that totally, you know, makes sense.
Thank you.
Now, prioritizing policies, that's kind of a weird thing these days, because I actually was asked by a friend who is another political geek like myself. And they told me, okay, next week when we see each other, I want you to prioritize your policies, you know, coming up to this next election and such. And I had a really hard time doing it because mm-hmm. when you think about healthcare, climate change, even civil rights civil rights in general, which are all over the map right now being taken away. Rent control for you know, is something that's led to homelessness. How do you find a way to prioritize all those things when they seem to be all hot button issues that need to be all taken care of now?
Yeah. I really appreciate that anecdote. I resonate with it a lot. When I first ran, people told me, you need your top three issues. What are they? Or what are you going to put on your postcard of your literature? And I thought, how could I possibly narrow them down? But how I'm thinking about it now is, one is what are people in the district most talking about? What are they care about? And then also, what is a root cause issue that could affect everything else that we care about? So on the first point, San Francisco is a really young district. Almost half of eligible voters are millennials under the age of 35. So for young people, climate is the number one issue. And I think it is, like, if we don't have a home and a planet, okay, we won't have anything else to live for. So that is top. Also, getting at the core of how the party politics works, you know, getting big money out of politics and enfranchising everyday people to participate in our democracy, I think is fundamental. Because right now, many of the reasons we can't move on immigration reform or education or criminal justice is because many of our representatives are beholden to their donor base and not to what the people want or what's in their best interest. So one of the ideas that I've been playing with and that really inspires me, why I wanted to run in San Francisco, not just because it's my home, but because I have this engineering background and this is the city that builds the technology that inspires the entire world, right. How could we be the model for using technology to upgrade Congress and to collect majority interest in real time? I would be excited to be a member of Congress that enables us to use a cheaper and more accurate polling system to figure out what people want. So one of the ways that would look like is if you are a constituent using a digital, secure, open source digital platform, you could go about it the traditional way where if you didn't have the time or maybe all the knowledge, you could, your default vote would go to me as your representative. But if you were knowledgeable and passionate about something, you could vote directly on it. Or there would be a third option where you could delegate that vote to someone you trust and know in your community. Let's say you had a friend who has worked a lot in immigrant detention or they're an immigration lawyer. You trust them on what we should be doing on immigration. So when something comes up for a vote on that topic, you could say, I delegate my vote to this person I trust, and now they have double those votes. And that would be a public tally, sort of say, of where the people stand. And if I were to deviate from voting against the people, I would always have to explain myself, like, why did I do that?
Well, and that's something too that actually does really give, you know, something that's always preached to young voters kind of in almost a blanket sort of way is, well, you know, it's your voice, it's your vote. But a lot of the time young voters get discouraged because they feel that their voice is not being heard. That really does give the voice back to the voters.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the things I did before running was a voter registration project throughout many states, especially in the South, and I got to talk to hundreds of people, especially young people, about why they had not voted before and why were they doing it now of all times, what. And I heard that again and again, you know, we're just smart enough to know that the current political system generates noise and apathy. And yeah, with the influence of corporate money drowning out our voices, it's hard to believe that we have that influence.
Now, how important do you believe, and I know, like, and you know, we've only got so much time, so I understand this is kind of a complex question, but how much do you believe on the subject of, because it seemed to be in the last debate, that was a huge, huge part of it, was healthcare. Mm-hmm. How much do you believe that is going to matter coming down to crunch time with the voters when you have people talking about either one, continuing on with the ACA, mm-hmm. Two, having a public option, or three, the one that I support, which is a Medicare for all, like Bernie Sanders talks about. How important do you believe that is going to be in this election, for whether it be House races, Senate races, or even the presidency?
Yeah. I talked about two things in the last question. I'd say the third and most important issue is healthcare.
Right.
This is something San Francisco has always, the majority of people here have wanted a Medicare for all system. Everywhere I go, like, I was just at the DMV and I was sitting next to a woman who was dressed in scrubs. So I just leaned over and said, "Hey, I see you work in the medical profession. Do you support a Medicare for all?" And she was like, "Of course." I'm in a hospital every day that's so broken. And this is, I think it's really interesting, especially in this district where, you see homelessness every day. And one of the major reasons that people are experiencing homelessness is because they couldn't afford a few hundred dollars of a medical bill. So that Medicare for All would help solve a problem that everyone in the city wants to tackle. Also, even if you are, let's say, more conservative or a business person, it's also in your interest to move away from a system where insurance, the burden of paying for insurance is put on a business.
Right.
In a single payer system, you can move away from that. It would just help the experience of everyone interacting with the medical field. We could have collective bargaining. Our drug prices would be lowered. And this is one of the key contrasts between Pelosi and I. We can all appreciate her leadership in passing the ACA, which helped millions of people get health insurance, which is amazing. But now we need to take the next step to Medicare for All. And if you're not willing to do that, especially in a district that really wants it and needs it, that's one of the main reasons we need new leadership.
Well, and it's, you know, people who have listened to the show, they know I've mentioned it a few times. And I even worry when I hear about the public option talk, because it feels to me like when you're going to buy a cell phone plan, right? Whereas if you have this amount of money, you get a better plan. And if you don't have this amount of money, you get kind of the entry level. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that's such a scary way to deal with people's health. And yet we've been doing it for far too long here in what is supposed to be, you know, one of the best countries in the world. Mm-hmm. I hope that, you know, I get so discouraged watching some of these debates where people say things like, people love their insurance. And it's like, no, like, you know, I went on Medicaid because I was in a car accident a few years ago. I couldn't work. And so I was put on Medicaid. And that was the first time in my life I'd actually gone to the doctor for preventative healthcare because I actually had that coverage. Mm-hmm. And it's yeah, I wish people would understand that because I just feel it's such a huge issue.
Yeah.
Now, before we go here, because I know you got to get out of here soon, but I mentioned earlier, obviously, you know, I'm a little older than you, but as us relatively young politicians, I suppose, I, you know, like I mentioned, I work as a secretary or volunteer, I should say, as a secretary for my county's Democrat group here. It's not all kind of, it's not all people think it is, right? It can be very, very, you know, we vote on bylaws for the group most of the time. But for someone who watches AOC or who watches you or who even watches Ro Khanna or whatnot, what is your advice to young people who actually do want to get involved and run for political office? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say if you are about to do it, make sure you have this close ring of people around you who are fully bought into the idea of you running and will support you no matter what. It is a brutal, grueling process to be a candidate, and you definitely need that emotional support and those people who are also skilled in ways that can help your campaign. Like, have at least one person that can help you with fundraising, or one person that could be your political policy guru. But that's the bare minimum of what you need.
Right.
I'd also say one of the people I derive a lot of inspiration from is Bryan Stevenson, the civil rights lawyer who wrote Just Mercy and helped build the new memorial to peace and justice, to lynching, and this museum from slavery to mass incarceration. And one of the stories he tells is working with civil rights leaders and how they were beaten and battered. And they see these bruises and these scars as medals of honor. And one of the things that I had to do in becoming a candidate is relinquish my ego in a way. Just, it's going to be hard. There's going to be things that you will be afraid of doing. But you have to show up anyway. Just the first step is just going for it, you know, filing that paperwork for candidacy and saying, and making that commitment. Once you commit, that's when the floodgates of support will open and people will really start to want to work with you and believe in you and keep propelling your campaign forward.
No, that really is great advice. And because it is, even as a, you know, on a very lower, the lowest of things you can do politically, you know, even I tend to, you know, if I know a meeting's coming up, it's like, oh no, I'm so scared of this, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it is sort of, you know, just letting it happen and just sort of, you know, especially, yeah, when you feel strongly about change as a lot of us do. So
right. That's
it can be scary.
Yes, and that's the key thing, what you just said, feeling strongly about something, always remembering why you are running. And for me, it has to do with many of the things that I saw working in the social justice space and doing documentary filmmaking. I met people, I got to go to places like locked facilities and the border and immigrant detention and, you know, Native American territories. And I saw people suffering, and I know that whatever hard challenges I'm going on through on the campaign trail, it's nothing in comparison to the lived experience of most people in this country today. And we really need people to step up and do something about it.
Well, I certainly hope that you do pull off the big upset. That would be something phenomenal. Obviously, I can't vote, unfortunately, since I live a couple states up I-5. But now, obviously, though, if things go the way we don't want them to, 2022, Pelosi will be she will be done as in that district. Do you have this feeling that you go, hey, I'm not going to give up, and if something doesn't work out in 2020, I'm going to continue this into 2022?
You know, I genuinely don't know. I'm certainly open to running again, but we'll see how things pan out, and things change so dramatically month to month. So it's not a definite, but maybe. And there's also, you know, you never know. There's also certain rumors that Nancy's daughter, Christine Pelosi, might run.
That's what I've heard, right? Yeah.
But I don't, or there might be other candidates in the wings who have, let's say, been waiting their turn, who also are planning on running. So I don't know. I'd have to consider all the information at hand.
Well, let's hope we don't need 2022. We've seen some upsets, and you're getting traction. I mean, we've seen you now on, like I said, on Young Turks, and I've seen people on Twitter now saying, "Oh my gosh, you got to go check out this candidate because she really does represent what we want." So, hey, it's politics are crazy, right? That's why we geek out on them. Thank you so much, Agatha, for being on the show. It means a lot to us. We obviously are big fans of yours. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brandon. It was a pleasure talking to you, and keep doing what you're doing.